We're just going to kind of look at the tabernacle a little bit today, the tabernacle of Moses. So this is Exodus part 15. Exodus part 15. Remember last week we were talking about it being the scale model. Model of the cross. And man coming to God through the cross and entering the heaven of heavens and the relationship of the whole universe to that. God giving us a scale model of his redemptive purposes. I just think it's very interesting. You know, we talked about this before, that 50 chapters on the tabernacle, 2 on creation. But all the talk is of creation, not of the tabernacle. And it's very, very important. And all the stuff, I mean, you guys are looking at the tabernacle, and you got to keep in mind, these were a bunch of slaves that came out of Egypt. They didn't have nothing. So how in the world did they get the stuff, you know, to make the tabernacle? I mean, it couldn't go to Walmart to buy it, couldn't go to Lowe's, couldn't go to Home Depot. So, you know, there's a couple of scriptures. I know you guys know this stuff, but I just want to go back over because it's so important. In Exodus 25, start at verse 3. This is the offering which ye shall take of them: gold, silver, brass, purple, blue, scarlet, fine linen, goat's hair, ram skins, dyed red, badger skins, sheet of wood, oil for the light, spices for the anointing oil, sweet incense, onyx stones, stones to be set in ephod, the breastplate. All of this was taken from the people. And in Exodus 35, verse 21, and they came, everyone whose heart stirred him up, and everyone whom his spirit made willing, and they brought the Lord's offering to the work of the tabernacle of the congregation, and for all the service, and for the holy garments. They came both men and women, as many as were willing hearted. They brought bracelets, earrings, rings, tablets, jewels of gold. Every man that offered an offering of gold unto the Lord. All whose hearts moved them. And the very fact that the people built this by their own free will contribution was their way of saying yes to God. Remember Moses up on the mountain, he comes down with the blueprint. He didn't come down with the material to make it, he came down with the blueprint. That was their part. God had said, I want to come among you, I want to dwell among you. I want to come and live among you. You guys live in a tent, I want to live in a tent like you do. I want to live in the midst of you. And in that tent, I'll show my redemptive purpose. Their response to God saying that was, yeah, we'll come and we'll furnish all the material. I see the co-labor here, you know, just type and shadow. It was their response of faith to God's desire to come and live among them. And where did they get all that stuff? You know, in Exodus 12, when they were coming out, Exodus 12 and 35. The children of Israel did according to the word of Moses, and they borrowed of the Egyptians jewels of silver, jewels of gold, raiment. The Lord gave the people favor in sight of the Egyptians. So they lent unto them such things as they required, and they spoiled the Egyptians. That's a bad translation there. They didn't borrow anything. Borrow means I'm going to give this back to you. But that's not the word. And the word lent there is the same word as borrowed. It means they requested it. They demanded it. And it says the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. So they just handed it over. You know, recompense for 400 years of unwages, back pay. And this was prophesied all the way in Exodus 3. Let me go over there and read that to you. Exodus 3, 21. And I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. It shall come to pass. And behold, it did. And when they go, you shall say, you shall not go empty. But every woman shall borrow of her neighbor, of her that sojourneth in her house, jewels of silver, jewels of gold, raiment. You shall put them upon your sons and upon your daughters, and you shall spoil the Egyptians. So they come out with the finest linens, the finest embroidery, the finest stones, all the gold. They come out with everything, all the precious metals, to build this tabernacle, this tent of meeting. That would, in fact, it would, in material fashion, it would suggest the greatness of their God among them. It would say in symbol form the one who would come to dwell among them. But it's one thing to get all this stuff, but how are they going to put it together? You know, I mean, they're slaves. You got no skilled labor here. How did they put it all together? Well, Exodus 31 tells us that. The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, See, I have called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, the tribe of Judah, and I filled him with the Spirit of God in wisdom and in understanding and knowledge and all manner of workmanship to devise cunning works. To work in gold, silver, brass, cutting stones. Not only was the material given by the power of God. And notice that the material was given. I mean, just think about this. All that favor that they got from God through the Egyptians, giving them all their stuff, they realized it was a gift of God. So what did they do? They gave it all back to God. In the giving to the building of this tabernacle. So they're giving it back by faith. And then it was taken by men who were endued with the Spirit of God. I mean, the Spirit of God's in this whole thing. This mobile tent to the glory of God was situated in the middle of all the other tents. And all this began when Moses came down with the blueprints, with the patent in his hand. See to it, Moses, you make it according. And then on New Year's Day, I'm just giving you some highlights here, it was actually up. It took about 8 months to build. And if you put together Exodus 34, chapter 34, verse 32, with Exodus 40, verses 2 and 17, there's 2 years after that the first New Year's Day of Passover, and it was 8 months since the plans came into their hands. Because remember, of their time in the wilderness, and it was then that the tabernacle was set up. And then in Exodus 40, verses 33, and he reared up the court around the tabernacle and the altar and set up the hanging of the court. So Moses finished the work. Then a cloud covered the tent of the congregation and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. Moses was not able to enter into the tent of congregation because the cloud abode thereon and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. The glory cloud that had been leading them by night, by day, came in and filled. It hovered over, then it came in and flooded the tent. And it stayed there the rest of their journey. And this was in anticipation of Jesus. I mean, I know it's type and shadow, but that glory came and abode on Jesus. Right there at the River Jordan. And then on the day of Pentecost was this very same thing where that glory came in, cloven tongues of fire. Now there was a certain position for every person to be in. I mean, when Paul writes things like he has placed them in the body, you know, he's put you there in certain positions in the body. Paul didn't just come up with this. I mean, Paul was avid in the scriptures. So he understood all the way back here that you just didn't camp where you wanted to. God told everybody where they were going to pitch their tents, how they were going to pitch their tents, who's going to live where. Nothing was left up to debate. There wasn't a vote on it. It was, boom, here's the way it's going to be. Had a certain position for everybody. The tabernacle that you got right there was in the center of the camp. And right there, coming into the gate, notice there's only one gate that comes into this outer court. Couldn't come in from anywhere else. It's just on the east side, coming into that gate. And right out from that was the tents of Moses and Aaron and the priests. They pitched their tents by the east side. Okay? So if you was to come into that tabernacle, you had to pass through the tents of Moses and Aaron. You had to pass through Moses' family. Now on the north side, because all around this tabernacle is going to be Levites. On the north side, there's one family called the Merarites. And we'll look at them more as we go on. Not today, but we'll look at them more. And on the west side is the Gershonites. All of these are of the family of Levi. And on the south side, the Kohathites. So you've got this tabernacle at the center, and surrounding it, you have the priest. And right at the gate, you got Moses. And here's a verse I bet you overlooked. And I'm going to read it to you anyway. It's out of Numbers chapter 2, verse 2. Because I've never seen this, and none of the pictures, I've never seen it. But you've got the tabernacle, and then you've got the Levites surrounding the tabernacle according to their families. And Moses and Aaron being right there in front of the gate. And in Numbers chapter 2, verse 2, every man of the children of Israel shall pitch by his own standard with the ensign of their father's house far off. About the tabernacle of the congregation they shall pitch. So in other words, there was a great space. We always just show all the tents around. But you got the tabernacle in the center, and the Levites surrounding it, and then a great space. I don't know how long that space was, but they just wasn't crowded together. Because there was a difference. They were way off. And then they begin to pitch around the tabernacle. So when you come out of that east gate, you're going to run. If I'm coming out of that east gate, coming out of the tabernacle, I'm going to run right into Moses and his family. And then there's going to be a great space. And then, after I get over this great space, I'm going to run into the tribe of Issachar. And then the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Zebulun. And then on the back side of the tabernacle, on the west side, I'm going to have the Gershonites and a big gap. And then I'm going to run into Manasseh, Ephraim, and Benjamin. I don't know if you remember this, just a little family note here, that Benjamin was the uncle of Manasseh and Ephraim. So all them are over here. Then on the north side, I would have the Merarites, a big gap. Then I would have Asher, Dan, and Naphtali. And on the south side, I would have the Kohathites, a big gap, and then Simon, Reuben, and Gad. And they never changed positions. They never moved those positions. And they say with approximately 2 to 3 million people that this circle that encamped Israel, or that encamped the tabernacle, would have been a circle of about 12 miles. Now, wherever they pitched, that's how they did it. There was God in the middle of them in a great radiance of glory, and the glory cloud would have been up there. And wherever they were at, they could see the glory. Now, in the Middle East, and this is just old tradition here, but the Arab chief, he would have a great spear. And when they would be traveling in their bands, he would be ahead of all of his people. And when he decides to stop, he would stick that great spear in the ground. And then all would pitch around him in a circle. That was their tradition over there. And when he wanted to move, he picked up his spear and began to move. That's exactly what God has done here with his great spear of glory, was the glory cloud. And when that glory cloud would stop, then they would camp around that in that exact order that I just gave you. So it's 3 million people wandering, moving in the desert. They're a wandering tribe, but God is their chieftain. His spear is the glory cloud in our midst, and we pitch our tent around him. We're God's people, his covenant community. We're the people who know how to approach God. Remember, we talked about that. They didn't approach God on their own terms. This whole thing wasn't based on some idea they had. It was all given to them. Given to Moses and given to them. They didn't bring anything to this. They didn't approach God because they were very good. They knew how to approach God because God said, "This is the way. This is the way." So when we look at this tabernacle, guys, I don't want you to look at it from Gentile viewpoint. I want you to look at it as an Israelite. How did the Israelites see it? You know, when you read scriptures, I heard a guy say this the other day, and I might mess these words up, but there's only one way, really, to interpret the Bible. And that is... How did the people understand it that it was being written to? How did they understand it? Because if I write you a letter, then I'm referring to something that you and I both know. 2,000 years later, if somebody reads that letter, they might not have any idea what you're talking about. So they just give you an example. When Paul was in the Philippian jail, now, we know those scriptures right there. I'm just throwing you a little side note in here. Paul's in the Philippians, begins to sing praises to the Lord, and the great earthquake comes, and then all the gates come open, and the head guy, the prisoner, begins to be scared, and he hollers out, how shall I be saved? And we just automatically think, he was looking for Jesus. He wasn't looking for Jesus. This guy was a pagan. He worked for the Roman government. He was a guard at a prison. And under their rules, if a prisoner escaped, you die. So he's not asking for the Lord. He's asking, how in the world am I going to be saved? Because all the gates came open because of an earthquake. I am surely going to die. Yet Paul used that opportunity to introduce him to Christ. But you see what we do with that. So you got to go into the scriptures and look at it, who it was written to and what they thought. So when we study the tabernacle, what did it mean to these Israelites? How did they view it? What was it? And it's so important. Because if you don't know, you're at an enormous disadvantage. Because you don't know what the Bible assumes that you know. Because this is Exodus. By the time we get over here in Kings and we're studying about Samuel and all these other, the Bible's already going to assume you know all about the tabernacle. So when he references certain things, you should already know that. I mean, when you're going to study about the great day of atonement, the Bible's going to think you should already know about these feasts. I mean, when Jesus says, "I am the way," what was that to an Israelite? I mean, what does it mean to a Christian? We think that means I got a ticket to heaven. But to an Israelite, that meant God is in the Holy of Holies right there. And there's no way for me to get there because I'm of Gad, Issachar. I'm not one of those priests. I'm way out here. I wasn't lucky enough to be one of the elect guys born of Aaron. There's no way I could approach God. And here Jesus says, "I'm the way." What does that mean to the Israelite? And that's how we have to look at Scripture. Any other way, we're just making it up as we go. So let me just read you just a little bit here. Well, you've got that. I've got a little video on the put together of the tabernacle. I'll show you that here in a minute. But yeah, let me give you one verse and we're going to do that video. It's only like 13 minutes and then we'll probably be done. But if I was to ask you guys, and I like tricking y'all. If I was to ask y'all, what is the table of the Lord according to scriptures? That tabernacle right there, what would you say? And I would have answered this question exactly like you're going to answer. But now because I've let the cat out of the bag, nobody's going to answer that question. Right?
Lots
so,
of questions.
Yeah. In Malachi, the table of the Lord. The table of the Lord. In Malachi chapter 1 and verse 7. And see, these are things studying the tabernacle, things that you would know, so when they're referenced, you'll know what he's talking about. Malachi chapter 1, verse 7. "Ye offer polluted bread upon mine altar." Now, what altar is he talking about? He's talking about the brass altar, right? So when he says, "You offer polluted bread upon mine altar, and you say, wherein have we polluted thee? In that ye say, the table of the Lord is contemptible." He's calling the brass altar the table of the Lord. And in verse 12 he says this, "But ye have profaned it, in that ye say, the table of the Lord is polluted, and the fruit thereof, even his meat, is contemptible." So he's making a reference to the brass altar. Making reference to the brass altar. So, in this tabernacle, you know, there's all kinds of stuff here. We're going to look at, we're going to see it in this video here that I'm going to show you. But I love studying about the tabernacle. I just love it. And we're going to do some heavy duty studying on the tabernacle, but we'll talk about that here. Just a little bit. So let me get to this little video, and it's just on the tabernacle. So.